Today is Friday, April 23rd, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinua Adofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. pledges historic carbon emission reduction by 2030.
The steps our countries take between now and Glasgow will set the world up for success to protect livelihoods around the world.
Also, Congress passes bill to combat violence against Asian Americans.
By passing this bill, we'll send a message to the country that should be all too obvious by now. Hate crimes will not be tolerated.
Plus, Russia withdraws troops from Ukraine border. These stories and more are next. Up to 130 people have died in a shipwreck off the coast of Libya, according to the International Organization for Migration. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Apparently, calls for rescue from the people on board the rubber dinghy went unheeded. International Organization for Migration spokeswoman Safa Micheli says the boat, reportedly carrying 130 people, was in distress for 2 days before it sank in the central Mediterranean.
For 2 days, the NGO Alarm Phone, which is responsible for sending distress calls to the relevant maritime rescue centers in the Mediterranean region, has been calling on states to uphold their responsibilities towards these people and send rescue vessels. Unfortunately, that has not happened.
Micheli says the independent rescue group SOS Mediterranee sent a vessel, the Ocean Viking, in search of the boat. Unfortunately, when it arrived on the scene Thursday evening, she says the crew was confronted with the distressing sight of dozens of bodies flowing around the capsized dinghy. She says this tragedy comes 2 days after another boat carrying around 103 migrants was intercepted by the Libyan Coast Guard. She says a mother and her child were found dead on that boat. The survivors have been returned to Libya and are being detained in a government facility.
There are further reports of a third boat carrying up to 40 people. We have no news on this boat. It's been out there at sea for 3 days. And again, we fear that the worst has happened given the status and the state of these boats, given the length and the duration that people are spending in what remains the most dangerous sea crossing in the world.
International law obliges states to rescue people at sea. However, as attitudes harden in Europe against asylum seekers and migrants, most of whom come from Africa and the Middle East, more countries are violating the law. Countries like Italy and Malta have barred migrant vessels from disembarking in their ports, and European countries have imposed fines on private vessels, such as the Ocean Viking, and imposed rules making it difficult for them to rescue migrants at sea. The IOM says the latest deaths bring the total number of people who have lost their lives in the central Mediterranean this year to 650. That is more than a fourfold increase in the number of recorded deaths over the same period last year. However, Micheli notes the IOM's ability to monitor deaths in the central Mediterranean has been drastically reduced because of the absence of state search and rescue vessels. So she says the actual number of deaths is likely to be much higher. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A hate crimes bill to combat violence against Asian Americans in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic now is before the House of Representatives, a day after it passed the U.S. Senate overwhelmingly, a rare bipartisan vote in an evenly divided chamber. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
The surge in such crimes has coincided with the COVID-19 pandemic. More than 3,000 incidents of violence against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have been reported to the group Stop AAPI Hate since mid-March 2020. Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii is lead sponsor of the legislation.
These unprovoked random attacks and incidents are happening in supermarkets, on our streets, in takeout restaurants, basically wherever we are.
The only vote against the bill came from Missouri Republican Josh Hawley. Mike Gracia, Washington.
World leaders are joining U.S. President Joe Biden on Friday for the second day of the virtual global summit on climate. Biden kicked off the summit with a pledge to substantially reduce U.S. carbon emissions by 2030 and double annual climate change funding to developing countries by 2024. 40 world leaders, as well as climate activists and representatives of international organizations, attending the summit, As VOA's White House correspondent Patsy Widaskuwara reports.
As President Joe Biden convened the virtual climate summit of 40 world leaders, he made an ambitious commitment to cut U.S. carbon emissions by 50 to 52% below 2005 levels by 2030. The U.S. aims to lead again on tackling climate change following the Trump administration's withdrawal from the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. Biden's new target is double the commitment made by the Obama administration, and the hope is that other countries will also go further before the November UN Climate Change Conference in Glasgow.
The steps our countries take between now and Glasgow will set the world up for success. To protect livelihoods around the world and keep global warming at a maximum of 1.5 degrees Celsius.
Some, including leaders of the European Union, Japan and Canada, announced new targets, as well as Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, often criticized for policies that speed up the deforestation of the Amazon.
I determined that our climate neutrality should be reached by 2050, moving up the previous announcement by 10 years. A sinalização anterior.
But the world's largest CO2 emitter did not make a new pledge. China's rapid development means achieving carbon neutrality in such a short time frame will be a challenge, said President Xi Jinping.
China will strive to peak carbon dioxide emissions before 2030 and achieve carbon neutrality before 2060.
India, the world's third largest emitter, and Russia, the fourth largest, also made no new commitments. Meanwhile, developing countries sought new assurances on climate change financing from wealthy nations to help lower-income countries reduce emissions. These countries have historically contributed the least to global emissions, but often suffer the most from the devastating effects of climate change, said South African President Cyril Ramaphosa.
Consequently, developed economies, we hold a view, have a responsibility to support developing economies to enable them to mitigate and adapt to climate change.
In 2009, developed countries pledged to increase climate financing under the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change to at least $100 billion per year by 2020. The promise has not been met, but Biden said Thursday he is renewing America's commitment to the pledge.
The United States will double its 2024 by 2024 our annual public climate financing development to developing countries.
The president announced the creation of America's first ever international climate finance plan, laying out steps for federal agencies to increase funding to developing nations. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News. And the sense of
urgency which you... As the world observed Earth Day this week, Israeli environmentalists worry that the Dead Sea, the lowest place on Earth, is disappearing. That is posing environmental dangers and could affect the Dead Sea's unique health benefits. For VOA, Linda Granstein reports from the Dead Sea.
Jake Benzakin steers his small boat toward a strange salt formation poking through the surface of the Dead Sea. Until recently, these formations were all underwater, but the sea is shrinking fast. He believes that the unique environment of the Dead Sea, the lowest place on Earth, must be preserved.
I think that the Dead Sea belongs to the world. You know, I think it's the only place in the world that is the Dead Sea. There is nothing like it. And yeah, I think we should save it.
The shrinking Dead Sea has been documented for years by the Dead Sea Revival Project.
The Dead Sea is actually right now in the lowest in recorded history. We're losing up to 600 Olympic pools per day. And we're trying to do anything we can to have a vision to restore the historical flow in order to try saving the Dead Sea in any way as possible.
The Dead Sea's main source of water is the Jordan River, but its flow has been drastically reduced by rain and water shortages in this desert region. Climate change has also led to the sudden appearance of over 6,000 huge and dangerous sinkholes in the landscape, devastating the tourist industry in the area. Some Israeli environmental artists are trying to raise awareness of the shrinking Dead Sea and the dangerous sinkholes using dance and environmental art installations.
This whole area also is a prophecy of what's going to happen in the world if we are not going to
take care of our mother nature.
Dead Sea Climate Therapy clinics have treated thousands of patients suffering from skin diseases and breathing problems. They utilize the region's unique environmental conditions, including increased oxygen levels, UVA radiation, and mineral-laden water. Now a new study shows that the Dead Sea environment may benefit COVID patients as well.
It is the first time that we can see that UVA radiation can be helpful for patients with COVID-19. In the recent study, we understood that UVA radiation can prevent death from COVID-19.
Environmentalists here say there are many reasons to save the Dead Sea and hope this research will raise awareness of what needs to be done to stop the Dead Sea from shrinking even more. Linda Gradstein for VOA News at the Dead Sea.
President Joe Biden will attend the June 14th summit of NATO, which plans to discuss key global security questions. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
President Joe Biden and other leaders of NATO countries plan to discuss tense ties with Russia and China, the troop withdrawal from Afghanistan, and the future of the 30-nation military alliance at the June 14 gathering. The NATO headquarters in Brussels meeting will be a face-to-face opportunity for Biden to rebuild relations with leaders from Europe and Canada that became strained under former President Donald Trump. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says this is a unique opportunity to reinforce NATO as the enduring embodiment of the bond between Europe and North America. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Russia announced on Thursday it was ordering troops back to base from the area near the border with Ukraine, apparently calling an end to a buildup of tens of thousands of soldiers that had alarmed the West. Gloria Tso of Reuters reports.
Russia announced Thursday it would be ordering troops to return from the border with Ukraine. The call is an apparent end to a substantial military buildup of tens of thousands of soldiers over the last few weeks, which had alarmed Western powers. Russia also pulled additional troops out of Crimea, the peninsula it annexed from Ukraine and occupied since 2014. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said he had ordered troops involved in exercises to return to their bases by May 1st, as they had completed what he called an inspection in the border area. However, military hardware will be left at a city near the border. Russia said it will be used again in another big exercise later this year. Moscow has not provided any troop numbers, but a Ukrainian spokeswoman said earlier this month Russia had deployed 50,000 new troops. That's on top of a permanent contingent of soldiers kept at the border and in Crimea. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who has invited Russian President Vladimir Putin to meet over the crisis, wrote on Twitter that the country welcomes any steps to de-escalate the situation in Donbass and that he was grateful to international partners for their support. Last week, the U.S. expelled Russian diplomats and tightened sanctions over accusations that it had hacked computers and meddled in its elections, prompting tit-for-tat expulsions by Moscow. Western countries have also urged Russia to free jailed opposition leader Alexei Navalny, who is on hunger strike. In a major speech on Wednesday, a defiant Putin warned Western countries not to cross Russia's unspecified red lines.
That's Gloria So of Reuters. Imprisoned opposition leader Alexei Navalny says he's ending his hunger strike after getting medical attention and being warned by his doctors that continuing it will be life-threatening. In an Instagram post, Navalny said he will continue to demand a visit from his doctors to address a loss of sensation in his legs and arms, which was the main demand the politician announced when he began his hunger strike. But he said he will start, quote, coming out of the hunger strike, unquote, on Friday, and the progress of ending it will take 24 days. The 44-year-old politician began the hunger strike on March 31st. This is the Voice of America. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations will be under as much scrutiny as Myanmar's junta leader when the 10-man regional body meets Saturday. The general who led the February coup ousting the elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi was invited to the special ASEAN summit being convened to discuss the post-coup crisis in Myanmar. People living with HIV and AIDS in Kenya say they could die because of shortage of antiretroviral medicines after the government decided to impose taxes on the life-saving drugs. Nationwide protests have taken place this week in major cities across Kenya, demanding the government to release the drugs, which have been held in customs warehouses. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. In Chad, there was a somber funeral ceremony today for the late President Idriss Deby Itno, who died of combat wounds on Tuesday. Several African political leaders, French President Macron, and other dignitaries were among those who gathered in N'Djamena. Meanwhile, Chadian rebels of the Front for Change and Concord, or FACT, said warplanes bombed one of their commanding centers Wednesday night. They accused France, which backs Chad's newly established military council, led by Deby's son, of supporting the alleged raid with aerial surveillance. The French army said Friday it had not carried out any airstrikes this week in Chad, but did not respond to Reuters' requests for comment. Reporter Moki Edwin Kizenki traveled to N'Djamena for Deby's funeral. VOA's Jason Patankin spoke to him about what he saw.
Hundreds of people turned out at the funeral ground today in N'Djamena. Most of them were mourning, and a lot of them are family members of the late president of Chad, Idriss Deby Itno, and his supporters. There were about six African leaders and the president of France, Emmanuel Macron. All of them who came out had very positive memories of late president Idriss Deby Itno. They presented him as somebody who was a pan-Africanist, somebody who fought against insecurity, especially terrorism in Mali, in northern Cameroon with the Boko Haram insurgency, in Nigeria, in Chad, and in Niger. So they had very good memories of him. They described him as somebody who worked for the development of Africa and who wanted economic progress in all of the continent.
And what's the security situation like in N'Djamena? Are there soldiers in the streets? Are people moving about normally?
Security in N'Djamena is watertight. In fact, you cannot move 5 meters without finding security men heavily armed. And this has scared residents who have gone back into their houses. They say they are afraid of the unknown. It is understandably so because of the threats that the rebels have been giving. Yesterday in the evening, some rebel factions warned the heads of state who are coming for the funeral not to step foot on N'Djamena. According to them, coming for the funeral is synonymous to supporting a dictatorship. They say they don't understand why somebody who have led the country for 30 years like Idriss Deby should be killed and his son, Mahamat Idriss Deby, takes over power.
As you said, people are staying inside, but if you've had a chance to talk to some regular citizens in N'Djamena, what are they saying about the new military council led by Deby's son, Mahamat Kaka?
I spoke to people, a few of them are in support of the military council. They think that it may be dangerous for Chad now should any other person who is not close to the military be called over to lead. But a majority seem to be against the military council. They are saying that the military council is made up of those who share the same ideas like President Idriss Deby. They are accusing the military council of being responsible for the underdevelopment of Chad. In fact, a young man of about 27, he gave his name as Zanali, told me this morning that he had been a teacher trained and has been out of, in the job market for over 7 years. He says thousands of them are like that in Chad, and they are blaming the leadership, the long rule of President Idriss Deby. They also say he appointed members of his family to almost all the positions, like the son who is Mamat, who is taking over now. So they see the governing council as something that should not have happened in Chad. They say they should hand over to civilian rule as early as possible.
That's reporter Moki Edwin Kizenke speaking with my colleague Jason Patankin from the Chadian capital, N'Djamena. The World Health Organization warns that millions of children in Africa are not receiving life-saving vaccinations against preventable killer diseases because most efforts are focused on ending the COVID-19 pandemic. Latest WHO figures find more than 4.4 million COVID-19 cases on the African continent, including 118,000 deaths. Lisa Schneider reports for VOA from Geneva.
Crucial immunization campaigns against diseases such as measles, polio, and yellow fever have been put on hold while countries tackle the COVID-19 pandemic. For example, the World Health Organization reports that 15 African countries last year delayed measles immunization campaigns to deal with the pandemic. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says seven of these countries have since completed the campaigns, but eight have not, risking outbreaks of this deadly disease.
Preliminary data shows that an estimated 16.6 million children in Africa missed planned supplemental measles vaccine doses between January 2020 and April 2021. As we fight COVID-19, we can't leave anyone dangerously exposed to other preventable diseases.
Moeti says hopes are growing that vaccines will help bring the COVID-19 pandemic to an end. At the same time, she says many of the millions of African children who are not being reached by routine vaccinations are at risk of dying. She says this must not and need not happen. Sierra Leone's Minister of Health and Sanitation, Austin Demby, agrees. He says vaccines really do work, and regular vaccinations for children must be maintained. He says immunization coverage in his country has improved steadily in the past 5 years before the COVID-19 outbreak. As a consequence, he says Sierra Leone has gone for a number of years without major outbreaks of vaccine-preventable diseases like measles and yellow fever.
Despite the gains that have been made in the immunization coverage over the years, the COVID-19 pandemic has led to adverse effect on vaccination coverage across the country. With all eyes focused on COVID-19 vaccines, other crucial vaccination commitments must not be forgotten.
WHO reports 41 African countries so far have received over 18 million doses through the COVAX vaccine sharing facility. This number, it says, includes seven countries that received their first deliveries last week due to shipment delays. Moeti says Africa's vaccine rollout also has been delayed because of production limitations in India, which is facing a severe wave of COVID-19. However, she says WHO has been informed that India will resume vaccine supplies to Africa in early May. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Rescue teams from several countries were battling against time on Friday to find a missing Indonesian Navy submarine lost in the Bali Sea, with 53 crew members who are rapidly running out of oxygen if they have not already been crushed by water pressure. Jason Albano of Reuters reports.
Rescue aircrafts and ships scoured the sea north of Bali on Friday, hunting for an Indonesian submarine gone missing along with a 53-person crew. They're racing against an oxygen supply that would have become critically low. Contact was lost on Wednesday with the KRI Nanggala 402 during a torpedo drill. Helicopters flew from Bali at first light on Friday, while Navy ships were deployed from the neighboring island of Banyuwangi early in the morning to the submarine's last known location. Officials have said the air supply on board would only last until Saturday. One Banyuwangi resident could only hope for the best.
I hope that they can handle this well and quick, and that they can save the whole crew on board.
Nothing conclusive has come out of the search so far, though Indonesia's Navy Chief of Staff said an item with a high magnetic force had been spotted within 100 meters from the water surface. It was unclear if the object was suspended or on the sea floor. Other countries, including Australia, Malaysia, India, Singapore, and the U.S., have sent ships or aircraft to assist in the search. The 44-year-old vessel in question had been cleared for use and was said to be in good condition. But an aerial search also spotted an oil spill near the submarine's dive location. The Navy said that could indicate damage to the vessel or be a signal from the crew.
That's Jason Albano of Reuters. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofoh in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great weekend.
People concerned about the health and well-being of our planet mark Earth Day every April 22nd. Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo. Please listen to the Science edition of Press Conference USA when I'm joined by a trio of experts for discussions on important environmental concerns like climate change and restoring Earth's ecosystems. Listen Saturday and Sunday.